He's also a professor at Sonoma State University. Good evening, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry. How are you doing?
Good. How would you describe the Great Central Valley?
In one word? It's very difficult to describe briefly. Because it's my home, because I have feelings about it that intrude on objectivity. But I would describe it, if I had to briefly, as a large, flat, verdant area, more altered, more shaped by man than any other open space probably on Earth, and with probably the most interesting, heterogeneous, churning, and yet class-ridden society that I know of.
What is the impact? How would you describe the impact upon the people of California and, in fact, the people in the rest of the world on the Great Central Valley?
Irving Stone once said that if you stopped the production in the Great Central Valley, you stopped California. And Gary Sposito, an environmental scientist at UC Riverside, has gone farther. He said if you stop the Great Central Valley, you put a great dent in the world's food supply, and at the same time, you change the nature of technology, because it would be an acknowledgement that what people considered progress has finally failed.
There is a sense, we talked earlier about the fact that as you drive down Highway 5 and you go by, not through, but by the Great Central Valley, that you are really unaware of the magnitude of the impact from those 25,000 square miles. In addition to Irving Stone's quote, what can you tell us? How can you describe it and give us a sense of the impact from this extraordinarily important region of this world?
The valley tends to put people off, I think, for a number of reasons. And one is its weather. It's foggy often in the winter. It's hot during the summer. And it seems so barren to people who don't know what to look for. Yet, it is the basis of our state's economy. It's a place that has produced, is continuing to produce, achievers in this state, people who are helping the state itself become what it can be. It feeds us, of course. It's producing artists. Without it, I suspect we would not be talking about California. It would not be of much interest, because it's been a cutting edge for poor people thought to claw their way into California's wealth. At the same time, it is a place a lot of people want to get away from. I grant you that. It's a paradox. It exists as a paradox. It's wealthy and yet it's barren, it seems. It's not wealthy for everyone.
What about the impact on the food? We mentioned the figure of $9 billion, yet that's hard for us to really translate into specific terms that really affect our own lives. How would you describe the impact of the food produced in this region upon people in California and the rest of the planet?
Well, about a quarter of all the produce eaten in the United States is produced in this one valley. The figures are hard to come by, but we know that about 95% of all the raisins, for example, come from the valley. We know that in excess of 50% come from the valley. It's for the entire nation. We know that a great the valley is fertilizer and pesticides, and that industry depends upon the valley. We know that we have in this valley the highest percentage of irrigated farmland, and as a result, the richest crop production in the history of the world.
And yet the valley has also befallen a number of very significant environmental problems. Describe those for us, please.
I suppose the one that I find most troubling, and that most of us find troubling, is the overall impact of irrigation, with its ability to change the basic ecology of an area, to leach salts, many of which are toxic, from the soil and concentrate them in its drainage. But it's also concentrated those very chemicals that are used as fertilizer and as insecticide in its own water supply now, draining now into the groundwater. We know that the land, for example, is subsiding in the San Joaquin Valley, down probably over 30 feet in many areas now from the time the groundwater was begun, they began to pump the groundwater. We're finding a lot of problems with just air pollution of the same sort that you have in the Los Angeles Basin, because the area does not get rid of its air. It sits in an inversion layer much of the time, this summer especially. And, of course, it's enjoying all of the benefits of overpopulation in many areas, Bakersfield, Fresno, Sacramento, where there's a dense urban and suburban population. And all of this is belied by the fact that you have probably 13 million of those 15 million acres apparently open.
Is there a chance, let me ask it this way, what do you see for the future of this region, the next decade, the next...
I think in the next decade, we're not going to see a great deal of change, but there's going to be a gradual deterioration of conditions. Farmers are going to have to work a lot harder for their crops. A great deal is going to be asked of scientists. And I suspect that if we don't begin making some positive steps now, 2 decades hence, we may have severe problems in that valley. We may lose something of that larder that is so important to this nation.
So what you're saying is that it is theoretically possible that over the next couple of decades, not only will California lose a tremendous source of revenue to the state, but the rest of the country and, in fact, the world will lose a tremendous source of food as well.
Exactly.
Jerry, thank you so much for being with us on KCBS Science in Action. If you have any questions about the Great Central Valley Project, we'll be discussing that during this hour on KCBS Science in Action. I'd like to hear from you. I'd like you to join in our discussion. You may do so simply by calling 800-228-5227. That's 800-228-KCBS. Irene in Sacramento. Good evening, Irene. You're on KCBS.
Yes, good evening. Very, very interesting.
Thank you.
We live in the Sacramento Valley here, and we benefit by all the marvelous agriculture and the weather patterns and so on. So it's all interesting to us. But my question is this. Why is it the weather has such an effect on the physical body here in the valley?
Now, what you mean the physical body, the human bodies?
Oh, it affects people with arthritis. It affects the respiratory tract, and it can vary in moments. Does the wind or the barometric pressure have anything to do with that?
Irene, that's a subject we'll be covering in our 8 o'clock hour, but I think what you're talking about also is the fact that these two gentlemen with me, Steve and Bob, are from the Central Valley. Talk about the impact on people of this area.
Well, I was going to say that having grown up in Sacramento myself, I understand what you're talking about. I'm not an expert in the physiological condition, but I could certainly attest to how the weather affects people there psychologically. The summers just seemed obviously very endless because of the impressive heat, and then the winters with that high fog. I think that does cause the negative impact or the negative impression that people have of that area, and I think it also does affect one growing up there, such as myself. I think it's something that it accentuates when the spring and fall come, because those are periods of time of extreme beauty that I found to be quite spectacular and unlike anything else in other parts of the state.
Steve, you have a comment?
Well, I think the weather is part of what made me love the place as well. It's strange to say that because it is oppressive, I guess, by some people's standards. But as a child growing up, that summer heat was something I relished. And I understand why people get tired of it, I suppose, but I enjoy going back to it, too.
If you have any questions, I'd like you to join in this and want to mention once again, this is called the Great Central Valley Project. And I don't think, gentlemen, we got to... as full a description of what you're trying to do here as possible. So go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Really, the project, as I said, began 4 years ago with the intent of basically photographing the entire Central Valley and producing sort of a multidisciplinary project, which includes our own photographs, historical photographs, and also will be producing a book, which will be coming out approximately a year from now. The exhibit, which opens at the California Academy of Sciences next Wednesday, will then travel throughout the state, primarily in the Central Valley, throughout the year 1987, and then we will tour throughout the nation following that. So there's a great deal of complexity to the project. In addition, we've produced a video, computer graphic video display unit, which will be at the opening, which will be something that will convey a lot of the information about the valley in terms of statistics, in terms of how the land has been changed or altered, that would be otherwise would be impossible to put up on a wall in an exhibit.
Andy in Pacifica. Good evening, Andy. You're on KCBS.
Yes, I've been listening to you, and you haven't mentioned anything about the destruction of the valley as far as salinity goes in the irrigation and the number of tens of thousands of acres that are being removed from production there because of the salinity of the irrigation. And I know that the valley is the breadbasket of the world. It has been for years. I was born here in Southern California. We've lived here for...
Okay, we're talking about the impacts of taking acres out of production, in part because of the salinity, the environmental poisoning effect of the land. What do you both know about that, Steve?
Well, basically, there has been a real problem with salts building in the soil, and a lot of land is threatened to... ...went in and built the... The Federal Water Project, there was supposedly a provision in it to drain the excess water off that's produced as agricultural wastewater from this new found source of irrigation. It was called the San Luis Drain. It was originally supposed to empty out into San Francisco Bay. They theoretically, when they managed to build the drain as far north as Gustine. And those are the Kestrison ponds that we've heard so much. That agricultural wastewater is being drained from Westland's water district in areas like mutations of birds, and the federal government intervening and saying that we are possibly in violation of federal international migratory bird treaties for poisoning these birds at this place that's actually a national wildlife refuge as well. So there's some real ironic things happening and some very complex issues that are being raised, because it's talking about putting water on the land to produce food, and yet at the same time, when we put this much water on the land, chemicals get leached into the soil. Chemicals that are already in the soil get leached out of it and into the groundwater, and you get a tumbling cycle of things that starts happening that we haven't really fully measured the consequences of, and we're starting to have to deal with some of those consequences. And it's not only going to be in the Central Valley, it's also happening in the Midwest, that selenium is starting to show up in the soil too, especially in the northern Midwest and the Dakotas. And that's one of the things that's been important to us about going back to the Central Valley and understanding what's happening in the Sacramento and San Joaquin, because what's happening there is going to follow modern agricultural methodology all around the world, because this is the place where in many ways modern agriculture was born. And the consequences of what it takes to produce this phenomenal productivity are starting to show themselves. And I guess what we hope to do with this photographic exhibit Right. We're not experts on any of these things. We're photographers. We're landscape photographers. But we care about the place. And what we hope to do is to get people to ask some questions and understand that there are some problems. And if this place is important to us, that we have to make some good decisions about making it stay healthy.
Is your primary audience the people who live near and around and in the Great Central Valley, or is it the greater population beyond that area?
Well, one of the things the project has pointed towards are problems that we feel are universal. Again, as David mentioned, these are problems that maybe now are becoming apparent here, but will become apparent throughout the country, I'm sure, and perhaps throughout the world, based on the agricultural methods that are being utilized, beginning here and then throughout the world. So we do feel that there's a universal appeal to this project beyond just that particular region. I think the people here in coastal California really should pay attention to this project, because I think there is a lot to be said about where we get our food and how we feed ourselves. And the issues that are being addressed here are certainly going to be applied to the rest of the state and the nation.
And this exhibit is something that will enable people to experience, in effect, the Great Central Valley without having to go there if they are unable to do so.
Well, visually, we hope to at least give our own interpretations of what that place meant to us. I mean, again, we are only two people with our own personal visions.
What are the key images for you, Steve?
Oh, it's hard to say. You mean images that I've made or images that I linked into to make photographs there?
That are in you right now. What are some of the special images that you...
Well, I think just that extreme expanse of space. We call it a valley, but the word valley barely applies because it's so huge. We're talking about a valley that's 500 miles long and 50 to 70 miles wide. It boggles the imagination. And as the air grows dirtier there, unfortunately, it becomes even less obvious that it's a valley because you can't see the mountains anymore. I guess as a child, the image that haunts me so much is the fact that every morning I could get up and see the Sierra Nevada, see Yosemite from where I grew up in Merced, and you can't see it anymore. And I suppose that's something that's happening to places all over the country. But the special placement of the place, the size of it, the fact that it is changing within our own lifetimes, that affects us. That drives us home to some, in some way, to makes us want to understand why it's changing and what the consequences of those changes are going to be.
Bob, what's an image in your mind?
Well, we found this project to be a real complex project because we wanted to take issues that are perhaps not necessarily particularly visual and convey them in a visual sense. And so, thinking about images that both Steve and I have made during this last 4 years, one of the ones that comes to mind is an image of a riparian forest, in other words, a natural landscape of the Central Valley, which in some ways we had to really hunt around for and look to find an area that hadn't been changed, that hadn't been plowed up, that hadn't been altered in some ways. And thinking of both Steve and I, images that we had made of some of the few remaining riparian forest areas, and how in the exhibit we want to convey what the valley was like as well as what it's like today.
You know, one of the impacts from agriculture and technology are these myriad of events which are confronting us urban dwellers every day. For example, right now, Martinez police are reporting a major fuel spill at the Shell refinery. It has been fully contained on the Shell property. The spill was reported about 6 o'clock this Saturday evening, tonight, and details are still sketchy as to the cause, but residents in the area near the intersection of Marina Vista Avenue and Miller Avenue have been evacuated in what police are saying now is only a precautionary move against people becoming overwhelmed by the fumes. That is a major fuel spill occurring in the Shell refinery at Martinez. It occurred about 6 o'clock this evening, and we'll have details. Talking with Steve Johnson and Bob Dawson about the Great Central Valley Project. I'd like you to join us if you have any questions about this extraordinary piece of California real estate. Give us a call toll free, 800-228-5227. That's 800-228-KCBS. KCBS News Time, 7:30.
Good evening.
once again, this is KCBS Science in Action. My name is Jerry Kay, talking about the Great Central Valley and a project so named, the Great Central Valley Project. It is a photographic exhibit of the landscape of the valley with some narrative, which will give you a really lovely sense, I think, of this extraordinary area, which covers some 25,000 square miles, 14% of California, $9 billion of worth of food produced there annually every year. It's one of those stories. And with me, incidentally, is Steve Johnson and Bob Dawson, and they are the co-directors of the Great Central Valley Project. Gentlemen, it is an area which has this sort of positive negative, the beauty, the tragedy, the immigrants which have come to this area and have seen it as the tremendous land of opportunity. Describe some of the contrasts. Let's use that word, contrasts, if you will. First, Steve Johnson.
Well, my own family came out in the 30s. They came from Oklahoma. And I think that's a lot of where the Dust Bowl refugees from the Midwest didn't end up coming. They came to California because it was sort of a land of milk and honey. But it's been that way historically. Immigrants have come to the valley because there was work. There was work because there was agriculture. Fortunately, they brought a lot of their talents and skills with them, and agriculture only benefited along the way. The Japanese brought a lot of experience with a very intensive orchard type of agriculture, and they've been very successful there. It may be one of the most racially mixed rural landscapes in the entire world. People from all over the world have come because it's a place to build that dream of a piece of land. Ironically, the story has not really turned out to be that way, because it's also one of the best examples of large corporate agriculture anywhere in the world. And so it is that mixture you were talking about, of that land of opportunity, but in reality, the homesteading dream was never in the valley. It was always a land of big business, where there was the railroads getting involved in big land grants that ended up in big land holdings, or whether now it's big corporate agriculture. And that's not to say that there's anything necessarily wrong with corporate agriculture, but it's not that sense of the family farm that we all like to think of when we think of agriculture. That's only a part of the story.
If you have any questions, in fact, what do you want to know? These gentlemen have been all through this. They're from the area. They have photographed a great number of pictures. We'll talk about how many in a moment, but it's really a place which certainly impacts all of us here in California and also the rest of the United States. If you have any questions for my guests, Steve Johnson and Bob Dawson, give us a call. The number is toll-free, 800-228-5227. That's 800-228 KCBS. KCBS News Time, 7:35.
You could win a one-week trip for you and a guest to London during the week of the royal wedding. Fly round trip from San Francisco to London on British Airways on July 20th in time for the royal wedding on July 23rd. Accommodations include 7 days and seven nights at the Royal Garden Hotel on Hyde Park.
Great Central Valley Project. Steve Johnson, what contrasts? Same question that I asked the earlier one about the contrasts in the Central Valley. What do you see the contrasts, Bob?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Jerry. Having traveled through the valley throughout the last 4 years on this project, we've seen an extreme range, as Steve has said, of the different populations in the valley. The extremely wealthy population, which has in some ways concentrated a lot of the wealth of the valley in their hands, and then the extremely poor. And this seems to be a continuing story. Part of the reason that it exists, I think, is that the valley has been a place that has been that entry level for a lot of the different groups coming into this country. In the case of the most recent wave of Southeast Asian immigrants, the Laotian and Hmong tribes people that have arrived have concentrated in the southern central San Joaquin Valley. And as a result, that extreme, again, difference in the economic ladder in the valley. And that's something that came through to us in the time that we've been there. Watching the land itself and watching the extreme differences in the landscape and the aridity of the southern San Joaquin as opposed to the rather lush area in the northern parts of the valley is another sort of an example of contrast, the change of the landscape as you travel from the north to the south, and the dryness that is something that's very, very apparent and obviously entails a lot of the irrigation that goes on. Another interesting thing we've noticed is the oil production. The San Joaquin, southern San Joaquin Valley is one of the largest oil producers in the world, and actually is produces as much oil as some of the OPEC nations. So there's an extreme amount of wealth that comes out of that too, and that's something people don't think about. They don't think of the San Joaquin Valley as being something that that has that kind of production going on. We're also watching an extreme change in the use of the land, and that's something that's relatively new in terms of the suburbanization of the farmland, and that's an area which I think both Steve and I have experienced in our own lives. We've seen that happen. We've seen that change, but the rapidity of that is just is shocking, actually.
George, good evening. In San Francisco, you're on KCBS.
Good evening. I'd like to ask your two observers if they know of any land in this region that's threatened by excess salt who are successfully farming without all this irrigation. Like, for instance, I'm thinking of the Mennonites in Pennsylvania using the old methods and returning some of the mulch to the soil. Is there any project underway to do that in California?
Excellent question, George. Thank you very much. Steve?
Well, I don't think we're really equipped to answer it too well, but I do know that the valley was a center of dryland farming during the latter part of the 19th century. It was one of the biggest wheat exporters in the entire world for a period of a few years. And so agriculture has been conducted there without irrigation, you know, in the past and been very successful. I think part of the problem now is just the cost of doing agriculture at all, both the loans that you have to take and the kind of operating expenses. If you don't have a fairly productive enterprise going with a pretty high profit margin, you can't engage in agriculture. And so the irrigation makes that phenomenal productivity possible. And the economics are difficult. There are some organizations that are definitely involved in sustainable forms of agriculture where they're looking at ways of using the land so that there isn't as much destruction taking place. And
Bob Dawson.
George, I also might want to mention that at the University of California at Davis, you're probably aware of the extreme development of large-scale agriculture, and many of the innovations that are now being used have come from there. And I know it's sort of a backwards way about going about doing dealing with salinity in the valley, but one of the recent inventions to come out of UC Davis is the strain of plants, especially a tomato plant, that actually can be grown in very, very salty land and water. And that seems to be one direction that the technology, at least, is developing to deal with this problem of the salinity of the soil. Again, it doesn't address the basic problem of how that salinity gets there in the first place, but it's one thing that is being developed.
Pat in San Francisco, we'll get to you in just a moment. If you have any questions for my guests, Steve Johnson and Bob Dawson, concerning the Great Central Valley Project, it's an area of 25,000 square miles. Get on the phone and give us a call. Our number is toll-free, 800-228-5227. That's 800-228-KCBS. KCBS News Time, 641.
Lon Simmons for Discovery Bay. If you love golf, or
into California to farm in the late 1840s and early 1850s. So I've seen a lot of it. What I'm concerned about is that knowing how many things that are wrong, is this Great California Project proposing to come up with any alternatives to what is now being done?
Well, I can answer it for them, but I will make sure they answer it on behalf of themselves. But it is a photographic exhibit. It is a museum exhibit, which I think hopes to raise questions in the public's mind and minds collectively and wants them to get more actively involved. But let me ask our guest, first of all, Steve Johnson.
Yeah, I think that says it pretty well, Jerry. We're not specialists in any of these things. The Valley is our home, ultimately, and we care about the place. And so what we're trying to do is create a format for a dialogue so that people will get more involved in helping to shape the future of the place. There are lots of organizations that are involved in it, rural land projects in one way or another, people that are trying to work on different approaches to agriculture. The state is involved in it, as is the federal government. Our purpose is not to provide the answers because we're not the scientists. We're trying to help get everyone in to ask the questions, and you're caring about the place and caring about the history of agriculture and your own family's heritage sort of speaks to the issue that we want to raise. If we get the dialogue going, we're going to get some things talked about and maybe measure the consequences of some of these projects and habits that we're creating with before they become real serious problems, as they are now.
Bob Dawson.
Yeah, Patricia, I might want to mention, too, that one of the other components of our Central Valley project will be a symposium, which will be taking place at the end of the exhibit in October, which will be a gathering together of scholars, people that have definite opinions and information about the Valley that I think will be specifically talking about some of recommendations for change in the future of the Valley. And that's one of the things that we feel is an important contribution to that subject.
The first, I'm sorry, Patricia, yes, what were you going to say?
Where is the symposium going to be?
It's going to be October 12th, and it'll be at the California Academy of Sciences.
And we'll make sure you, it is mentioned on this program to update you on that October 12th symposium concerning the Central Valley of California. Gentlemen, what do you, when we look at this area, and we've talked about its impact, we've talked about the contrast between its beauty, its intrinsic beauty, the fact that immigrants have come to that area hoping for a land of gold, a land of plenty, success, fulfillment of their dreams, and yet many of them have been have not succeeded in those particular goals. It's an area that has an impact on the rest of California, the United States, and in fact the world. It's also a leader in technology, energy production. What are you left with at this moment as we sit here looking out on this landscape, this urban landscape? Almost, we can almost see the Central Valley, and yet not quite. And I think that's typical of many Californians. We can see it, but not quite.
I think that was part of our motivation for trying to pull this thing together and trying to use photographs as our tool. It's important for people to recognize that there is something important here visually, at the very least, because then maybe they'll stop and look around. Jerry Haslam, who you had on the line earlier, co-authored a book called California Heartland that was excerpts from literature that's been produced in the Valley over the last 100 years. And some of the descriptions you got from the poetry really linked into it in a lot of the same ways that we're trying to visually. The beauty is not an obvious one unless you like open, flat land. But that's also a very dramatic change from what the Valley was. When Europeans first came to the Valley, grizzly bear and antelope and tule elk and one of the largest waterfowl populations in North America that was what the place was. Salmon and beaver everywhere. And the Indians thought of it as paradise. In fact, there were more Native Americans living in the Central Valley than any other region in North America. Some estimates range as high as 160,000, which is a phenomenal number of people living in that kind of situation. So some people thought of it as a paradise that lived there originally, and people came from outside and viewed it as a challenge, an arid land to be controlled in some ways. And we've changed it. We've cut down the oak forests, we've rerouted the rivers, and we've made it one of the most productive places in the history of agriculture. And it's a place we need to think about because it's sort of a paradigm for how the kinds of directions we're going.
Ultimately, we have certainly changed the landscape of the Central Valley probably more than any other land in this country, certainly.
At least a rural landscape, yes.
And we have made it productive, but ultimately, will we succeed, that is, in being able to sustain that kind of level of production? Bob?
That's one of the big challenges that we're facing right now at this point. And if you follow some lines of thought and some reasonings, the answer would be no, that the methods of agriculture that we're using today are leading towards a desolation of that landscape. That doesn't mean that there isn't any hope and that the people aren't aware of the direction that we're going. But ultimately, if we were to continue what we're doing, I think we were going to have some problems that will eventually wind up destroying the land, making it sterile, and making it unusable for future agriculture. Again, you have to talk to various people and various sources to get an answer on that. And I think that that's one of the things that we're exploring with this project, is trying to address that particular project, looking at it from many different sides, and trying to understand where we are going at this point. And the voices, I think, that are being raised towards a positive aspect of the future are also talking about change, about changing with the methods that we're using now, that we can't continue. Away from the methods that we're using now. And that's important, and that's something that I think we all have to explore. And again, as we've mentioned a few times on the air here, we basically are fed from the Central Valley. So it's incredibly important for us here in the Bay Area to know about what's going on in the Central Valley.
You're photographers. Let's play a little game together here, and our listeners in this vast audience using our collective minds, let's play along together. Let me ask each of you to alternate with an image, just a simple image of from the Central Valley Project, your photographic essay, if you will, which incidentally is a museum exhibit which will be opening, what is the date?
July 2nd.
Next Wednesday night.
July 2nd. It is called the Great Central Valley Project. And it is a photographic exhibit, an essay, along with some text, which explores the myriad of issues confronting us and this part of the planet. So, gentlemen, let me start with Steve Johnson. Give me an image from your project.
Oh, I think the one that I was working on a final print for the exhibit today of the Kettleman Plain just south of Coalinga, where Bob and I were together actually on that particular trip. It's on Highway 33, where we came over this one rise, and there was this just vast space of plowed dry land farm right in front of us that had just been plowed, or the wind would have already disturbed the furrows. Just as far as the eye could see, with a tiny little line of hills that were the Kettleman Hills off in the distance. It's both a spatial thing, a sense of the heat from that image, and a sense of the constant working the land. And that's a photograph that has ended up meaning a lot to me.
Bob Dawson.
Well, actually, there's two images, Jerry. One is not mine, but it was made in 1888 by a man named Carlton Watkins, who was a very famous photographer in his day and did a great deal of work at the end of his career in the southern San Joaquin Valley. And it's an image of the early transition of the valley, of the changing the agricultural methods, of the beginnings of using irrigation. And it shows a man stooped over next to his mule, which is operating a horse-drawn irrigator, and the first crops that are being planted on that soil. And then I think about one of my own images, which is a picture of the San Luis drain in the Kesterson National Wildlife Refuge, which sort of shows some of the ultimate sacrifice that land has made. It's actually a picture of a long canal that's leading off towards the distance with a great deal of looks sort of a nasty looking gunk in the middle of the drain itself. So those two pictures in a way sort of come to mind when I think about the Central Valley and the Central Valley Project.
I've been asking for one more, but first Steve Johnson, another image.
Oh, I think the it happens to be another construction project, another canal. It's interesting that Bob mentioned it, the Kesterson drain, because not too awfully far away from that in Merced County as well. Merced is where I'm from. The San Joaquin River flows through, and right where Fresno County and Merced County and the San Joaquin River intersect, there happens to be a canal that parallels the San Joaquin River. And the canal had happened to have more water in it than San Joaquin River did at the time that I made the photograph. And it's been one that happens to be kind of beautiful, and so we end up using it a lot because it has the oak trees in it and the canal and the creek in it, and it gives you a sense of what that rural landscape is about. But the irony of the canal carrying more water than the river is something that I continue to sort of be haunted by.
Interesting. Yeah. If you have any questions, we have a few minutes for remaining with our guests, Steve Johnson and Bob Dawson, co-directors of the Great Central Valley Project, a museum exhibit opening July 2nd here in San Francisco, and it will travel elsewhere in California. You may give us a call quickly here, 800-228-5227. That's 800-228-KCBS. KCBS News Time, 7:53.
This is Jan Black inviting you to join me Monday afternoon from 1 to 3 on KCBS. In our 1 o'clock hour, we'll talk with former Harvard professor Timothy Leary about how he's changed since the 1960s. Then in our 2 o'clock hour, our guests...
The Great Central Valley Project at the California Academy of Sciences. How many photographs are in the exhibit, Bob?
Well, both Steve and I have taken 4 years of our photography and whittled it down to 35 prints each of our own work, which was harder than you can believe. And in addition, we have about 12... historical images and posters, drawings, postcards, photographs by other people tracing the history of the Central Valley.
This is a culling together, I assume, of many, many photographs. About how many have you taken over this period of time, 4 years?
Oh, we've made some reckless guesses, but I think the best we could come at would... I keep guessing around 10,000 negatives were made. It is a guess, but 4 years of work, being out there as much as you can, I think that's a reasonable number to look toward.
The process of taking that many photographs and then culling it down to the essence, the essential images, if you will. But what did you have to go through to do that, to sort out 9,900 or whatever?
Well, a great deal of pain. It's always hard to give up something that you feel precious about. And for us, the process of cutting out images, I think, was the worst part of the project. Fortunately, we had a lot to choose from, and I hope that the culling down process will provide something that makes a significant statement about this place that hasn't been done before. By the way, there literally hasn't been an exploration like this on the Central Valley, and so in a way we feel we are breaking new ground by putting this thing together.
Eleanor in Lodi, good evening, Eleanor. You're on KCBS.
I would like to know if they could give me, the gentleman could give me the southern boundary as well as the northern boundary of the Central Valley.
We certainly will try. Steve Johnson.
Well, I think we generally think of the northern part of the valley as being Redding, Red Bluff area, and the southern part being south of Bakersfield on the Grapevine, the Tehachapi Mountains, that whole area.
There's
a big valley.
There have been various definitions, Eleanor, of what actually is the Great Central Valley, one of which was the first rock, first layer of rock as you head up into the foothills around the edge of the valley. Someone even suggested that maybe there's a state of mind of the Central Valley, that there's a particular way of thinking. I'm not sure about that. I haven't come from the valley myself, but that was one suggestion.
Interesting. What do you mean a state of mind?
Well, I'm not sure. The man that was talking about that was a sociologist, and so he was talking about the way people think and act. And again, I think that he was referring to perhaps there's a difference in his estimation of the people that the way that they act in the Central Valley as opposed to the people in the foothills or the people in the coastal California. And certainly there are differences. So
there's certainly an independent frame of mind there, and that's what makes me still feel very good about having come from the place.
Got one more little piece of business before we wrap up this hour with our guests, Steve Johnson, Bob Dawson, co-directors of the Great Central Valley Project, a museum exhibit opening July 2nd here in California. KCBS News Time, 7:57.
Do you salt your food even before you take?
And you are certainly encouraged to view this museum exhibit opening at the California Academy of Sciences. Bob Dawson, you mentioned that it will be traveling. Where can others who are not around the San Francisco Bay Area see the Great Central Valley Project?
Well, for those living in the Central Valley, fortunately, it's going to be literally all over. We're going to be traveling to 9 different Central Valley cities, stretching from Redding in the north through Chico, Sacramento, Modesto, Merced, Bakersfield, Visalia. So we'll have a pretty extreme, and Stockton, a pretty extreme range of cities there. And then after that, it'll be touring throughout the nation.
All right. Rob in Sacramento, good evening. You're on KCBS.
Yeah, is Steve Johnson there?
He certainly is. Go right ahead.
Steve,
yeah.
Did you used to live in Merced?
Sure do.
You did. Live at 13, right next on 24th Street, right?
One time.
Your mother owns that house, right?
Sure does.
I'm your next door neighbor.
See, it's a small valley in a lot of ways, even if there's 3.5 million people there.
I was that guy in the brown house with the trash dad hat with the two dogs in the back.
Well, Rob, thanks very much for calling Steve Johnson, and we encourage you to go visit the Great Central Valley Project. It opens, July 3rd. At the California Academy of Sciences Museum, right here in San Francisco. Any last thoughts, Steve Johnson?
Well, I did have one thought. You know, we talk about agriculture a lot, and we talk about some of the negative consequences, but I'll tell you one thing for sure. Nobody loves that place more than the people working that land, and they're going to work very hard to make sure it survives.
Bob Dawson.
I think that I would just encourage everybody to come to the exhibit, and we'll try to do our best to make it a worthwhile and exciting, and I think people will enjoy it.
All right. Thanks very much for being with me on KCBS Science in Action. I want to thank Kowina Carmen Souza, for helping me with this hour of Science in Action. Next hour, some strange, interesting, weird, magnificent questions about the weather. This is KCBS Science in Action. I'm Jerry Kay. Now CBS covers the world.